Welcome to Oak City Church, a family of learners, lovers, and givers sent. For more information, visit us online at oakcitychurch.com. Let us know if we can help you in any way. Thank you for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen.
No, it was terrible. Okay, good morning. Okay, I need Sam and I need to not make that noise again. Sam and Danielle and Mackie, or Dave, or David Mackie. I haven't figured out what to call you yet. So, yes, I'm Katie Pritchett, and the thing that I think I probably identify most with as far as serving in Oak City is Stephen Ministry, which is a group of well-trained men and women who walk through hard times with people with love and truth and grace. That is not why I'm up here, though. I'm up here because Jeff wanted a Sunday off. I mean, I don't know if that's true. It might be true. But I'm also up here because I am a lot like most of you. I'm married and I have kids. And why am I making that noise? I don't know. Anyway, I'm married and I have kids. And a lot of you guys too. And what comes with that is chaos. Sunday morning is put your head down and get your kids where they need to go, get your kids back into your car when it's all said and done and no one gets hit by a car or bad things happen. And so when that happens, a lot of times we don't look up and pay attention to our surroundings and to the people that are outside of our normal life. And that happens a lot, not just in church, but in the day-to-day life. And so the problem with that is that we miss out on really cool people and experiences sometimes. And three of those cool people are up here right now. This is Sam Ed, who you probably, if you've been here long enough, know as our family ministry person. We have, you're going to say your last name, Danielle
Mollier.
There's a couple of extra letters in there, so don't be confused. And then we have Mollier, man, I did not know that. And then we have David Mackie, whatever you want to call him. So here we go. We are going, they have graciously allowed me to ask them intrusive questions about the life of a single person in the church. And so I would ask you to listen and hear what they have to say. We're going to start off, make it real awkward real quick with, you know, when we're not thinking and we're just pushing through life, we can accidentally say things that can be very hurtful, well-meaning, but maybe hurtful things. And so we're going to start with number one. Hey, I've got a friend, or better yet, I've got a friend who's a Christian. And so it's like the major, like their goal in that is to set you up. And truth be told, you three kind of take that differently. And so, Mackie, that's kind of offensive to you.
I mean, yeah, it's like you have poor social skills. Do you have friends that are single?
Right. So, Danielle, you're kind of like,
whatever. I mean, is he hot? Or if he lives in your basement and drives a moped with a breathalyzer on it, absolutely not. And that is offensive.
And then Sam, you would say?
I'm kind of like the Statue of Liberty. Like, send me your poor, your brokenhearted. Like, please set me up.
So I think the takeaway from that is don't assume they want to be set up, ask first. Another one is...
this is your permission.
You don't have to ask Sam anymore. You're good to go. People will come up to you and they'll say, hey, man, my husband or my wife is out of town and I got to like sit on the couch in my pajamas all day and eat whatever I wanted all day and binge watch all my favorite shows. That must be exactly what your life is like. Or the flip side of that, Danielle, shh. Or the flip side of that is, assuming that your social calendar is just brimming with party and loads of fun and activity. And so, Sam, would you...
Yeah. Let me be clear. Like, I don't remember the last time I slept past, like, 7 a.m. There's a lot to do during the day, even though I don't have a husband or children. There's just a lot of responsibilities that just come with life. And so I don't stay in my pajamas and eat bonbons all day. But also, like Katie said, there's a lot of Friday and Saturday nights that I'm like, if you haven't invited me over, I'm at home. Like, these are the majority of the single people that I know. And so if I'm not at your house, I'm probably at home with my dog.
There you go. Now, this one, just going to go with body language for responses. Are you gay? Or the kinder way people, I guess, have said it is, or has anyone asked you if you're gay? Right? And that felt real good, I'm sure, to get that. So we're going to come back to the... So we're going to come back to the to that in a little bit. Y'all, I mean, you say things when you're not thinking and when you're not paying attention. And so this is a time when we're just going to pay attention. Daniel, we're going to start with you. I want to hear from all of you guys just a little, I'm going to hear like the past 10 years or so, not like all the details, but like summary of where you were then, where you are now, and where God has been in all of it. So Danielle, go.
Sure. So real quick, just to give you some context. This was not the plan. And I mentioned when we were prepping for this, like, to be clear, as a child, I was raised in a church that was like many churches that many of you were raised in, where it was like, Jesus is coming back probably tomorrow. Like, it's not firm, but it's definitely penciled, like, be ready. And so I remember, like, most of my bedtime prayers were, like, I'm real stoked about heaven and how I'm not going to go to hell, but also, could you just, like, please just wait, like, 30 years? Like, I don't even care if my kids aren't grown. I just want to be selfishly married and have kids before you come back, because that's the only thing that I feel like I can't do in heaven, and I think you owe me this. And that was like my child prayer. So I really thought, even as a young child, that that was the one thing that I couldn't negotiate with God on. So that, don't do that. But fast forward about 10 years ago, it's kind of when sort of where I am now, I think, kind of started. Not that God hasn't been faithful and not that he hasn't been very clear with me about things before that, but about 10 years ago, I had a plan, which was I had gotten into grad school, I was going to move to Massachusetts. My company that I worked for had even said, like, you can work remotely from wherever you need to be, which I did not expect. And so I had moved home for a few months to save up to go to Massachusetts. And I was going to be a professor. And it's a terrible idea. So I, all of a sudden and very unexpectedly, I got laid off from my job. And then 3 days later, was given an offer for another job. And within 72 hours, had to move back to Raleigh very quickly to start this job. And I thought, well, this must be God, like, for sure, because who gets a job in 72 hours? And then I got in that job, and it was the worst 6 months of my whole life without comparison. I was just so broken. My CEO was... he is currently in a federal prison in New York for perpetrating a Ponzi scheme. And on my birthday, he was arrested at the office. And on the way out the door, he had a heart attack in the parking lot. And then when he left, his son took over, and he was bipolar, like, genuinely, without any medication, And so on some days I would go, and he would be like, we're going to do all the things, and it's going to be great, we're going to make the money. And other days I would go, and he'd be like, you're what's wrong with everything. And it was very abusive, and a super abusive environment. And so I had, like, daily heartburn, which I had never experienced in my life. I was, like, you know, 24 or 5. And I would cry on my way to work, and I would cry on my way home. And on my way to work, the only way I could get in the door was just to pray the whole time. And it was when that song, How He Loves Us, came out. It was before we overplayed it too much. And so I would just put it on repeat, and I would just sob and sing all the way to work. And I remember being like, I don't want to be mean, God, but, like, I need somebody to help me. Like, I can't do this by myself. I can't handle this life by myself, and I don't know what's happening and why this is cool, but I'm not okay with it. And so I would just beg and beg and beg, like, please just have somebody to carry the burden with me. That's all I'm asking. And I remember very clearly one day on the way to work, about 6 months in, he was like, you need to let me be your husband. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. And he was like, you need to let me provide for you, and you need to let me take care of you, because I can do that, turns out. And so I was like, well, hey, look, cool, go for it, do your thing, whatever, I will do it. Just please help me. And so I went into work that day, and that afternoon, my boss sat me down unexpectedly and presented me a job offer for what would, according to him, give me, like, I think $250,000 a year. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, are you kidding me? This quickly you're going to handle this? So it felt like God was saying, like, just in case you weren't sure whether I owned everything, like, I own everything, and it takes this for me to handle my business. And so despite that, I don't know if you guys know this, I'm not a millionaire, but I definitely still very much needed to quit that job. And so because of, I think, the bravery of, like, oh, that's right, you handle everything, within a week, I quit that job. I applied for grad school, and I put in my 2 weeks notice. At the end of 1 week, they called me forward and said, we're going to lay you off, which they did not have to do. And so I got unemployment. And remember, it had been 6 months, so time-wise, this all just worked out exactly how it needed to. And then within 3 months of unemployment, I got a call from one of my doctors saying, hey, can you come work for me? Can you start this afternoon at 2 o'clock? And from that moment on, I mean, God has, without question, every single day, provided for me in every way possible. And I don't mean, like, it's been perfect. Like, there was a point where I was, like, a little homeless, but, like, not really. So, like, I was living above my sister's garage, and they bought a house, and I was like, I was, like, 2 weeks from graduating from grad school, so I'd been full-time internship, and for 8 months, and I was making $10 an hour being, like, a personal assistant under the table, so I had no employment to my name. And I was like, I can't get an apartment. I don't have enough money. I need to find a job. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so then a week later, I got a job working as a house staff who stayed overnight half of the week with girls in a residential mental health facility. And so half the week I would work and stay there, and half of the week I would stay in my friend's extra bedroom, and then every other weekend I would go to my parents' house, and, like, all my stuff was everywhere, and I don't really recommend it, but, like, God was so providing. There was no question, and it wasn't easy, but it was easy. Like, it was perfect. And there were days that I'd be like, God, if I just had $50, I would be good. I'd be golden until payday. But, like, I really need, like, $50 to make the rest of this payment, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. And I'd go to my mailbox, and there would be a check from a class action lawsuit for $50. So he has been super duper incredibly, he's been the best husband I could ask for. And I've never gone a day without. So he's really
He's been what he asked you
Shown
to trust
up.
Him to be.
Yeah.
Nice. So we're going to, in all this, your career path shifted. You went to get your master's in counseling, and you've been.
Marriage and family therapy, just to be clear.
Fantastic. And I've been working in that profession for how long?
I graduated 5 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And not too long ago, you looked around and you thought, what about your life?
Like, I really like it. Like, I think the good example that I have, and I hope this doesn't sound like braggy, because I don't mean for it to, but like, I remember talking to Katie one time, and I was just like, I'm so like content. Like, it just occurred to me that like, I really couldn't ask for anything more on a day-to-day basis. And people always joke about how like your social media is what you present to people, but it's not accurate. And I feel like if I am scrolling through like Instagram, which is really all I do anymore, and see like my posts, I'm always like, oh, that really was such a good time. Like, I just am so grateful for every bit of my life. And I feel like that's 100% him and has nothing to do with me, because my plans are so far from what awesomeness I currently have.
10 years ago, you were light years away from being content. Now, you would say you're actively, intentionally in a place of contentment. But God had to reveal a truth to you over the span of time in order for you to get to that place. What was that truth?
I mean, I think for me, it was really just that I need to find my satisfaction in him, and no matter what my life looks like, that's true. So if I was single, if I was married, if I had kids, contentment still comes from him, and he can do all things, and he can bring me joy in all things. And so I think finding my satisfaction in him, and that's it. Like, that's whatever happens.
Yeah.
It's every day. Like, if I get married, I'm still going to have to seek him for contentment. I think you guys probably know what I'm talking about. So,
awesome.
You know, like, turns out getting married does not fix your problems. And having kids doesn't fix your problems. I feel really awkward saying that to you guys. No,
that's right.
So sorry.
It's true. I'm here. I own that. It's absolutely true. 100%.
So, like, I might as well start now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, finding my joy in him. Is that all I was supposed to say?
I think so.
I
For
hope
sure.
So.
Sam, can you give a brief
yes.
sum of the past 10 or so years?
Yeah. I graduated from college in 2002, and by the time I graduated from college, I had had 5 roommates get married. They were my age, so all my friends were getting married really young, and I felt like there was a lot of keeping up to do. They all got married, they bought houses, they had children, they did all of the things, and so I've a bit pressed like fast forward on my life. Any way I could keep up, I did. Essentially anything that was by my own power that I could control, I did. So pressed fast forward on the job, pursued my career really hard, bought a house when I like owned a home at 25, a home that I looked at and thought, this is a house like my family can grow into. And just really did anything I could to make sure that my life looked like it was moving forward. But really inside felt like there were so many things that I had pressed pause on, kind of the big things that maybe God was calling me to do that required any amount of trust in him. I thought, well, I'll do that when I get married. That'll be a lot easier when there's someone else with me trusting in those big things. And so even just in things like I've been serving and I had served in college ministry, I had served in student ministry with high school students and had always felt like that was a good fit. but thought all the women I knew that worked in ministry either were married and had spouses that could support their little income, or they lived like they were sophomores in college with like five roommates, and neither of those were for me. So then you fast forward 2009, well, 2008, I'd been working in politics. So 2008, we found ourselves on the losing end of an election and without a job. And so really took that opportunity through a strange course of events to really, for the first time, kind of semi-unpress that pause button that I had had on life and stepped out into full-time ministry, which at the time was not, like all my fears came true. Like it did not pay the bills. I had to take in roommates. Even then, I didn't know how ends were going to meet, but God provided in some pretty crazy ways. That's not the case now. Thank you, Oak City, for the way you value your staff. But that was just, yeah, kind of all my fears came true in that, but it felt good to step out in faith.
But it's hard for you to keep out of that pause position when it comes to marriage. Marriage should, in your mind, you fight that thought of it dictates things happening. Things can't happen until marriage happens. And God has been telling you to keep living in full confidence and move in faith. And so what did you do 6 months ago?
Yeah, well,
that you said was felt like a little bit cheesy, but like needed to happen.
Yeah, I had been reading in the book of Daniel, and in the book of Daniel we see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They are standing up to the king and refusing to bow down to these idols that King Nebuchadnezzar has made. And so he says, I'm going to throw them in the fiery furnace. So that's what he does. And he says to them, he like challenges them to like if their God is going to save them. And they say, you know, yes, like he can save us. And they say, but if not, he's still good. And that really hit me. Not that like singleness is like going through a fiery furnace. It's not. It is refining, but it is not like being cast into a fiery furnace. But really what they were doing was declaring God's goodness despite their circumstances. And I felt like, in what ways does my life not reflect God's goodness despite my circumstances? And so really started evaluating some things and felt like I was living in a lot of fear, and that fear was keeping me from really fully declaring God's goodness because I wasn't living the life that he had set out for me. And so the night before my 37th birthday, in very like dramatic fashion, I wrote a goodbye letter to fear and told it I was done. I was like breaking up with fear. I'm done with you. And just declared that I was going to live a life of bravery and boldness. And that is not something that I have arrived at. But I say that even out loud today to preach it to myself. Like I have to say, like every day, like Jesus died for me to live an abundant life now, not just when I'm married.
Sweet. And I think it's fair to say that you don't, that you would prefer to be married versus single. So how has God been present to you in that desire not yet fulfilled place?
Yeah, I mean, he really, it doesn't take away my desire to be married, but just to be content in his goodness now.
Yeah. So Mackie, you're up. And because Sam's here and she works in family ministry, I'm going to do a friendly reminder to watch the length because she's leaving here at 10:05 apparently.
Got
it. Okay, so Mackie, you've been a part of this church for almost since the beginning, and I did not know much about you until we sat down Tuesday, and I'm wondering if other people in here are like that. And so tell us, give us again, like, super brief, 10 year. I know 10 years is super brief. That's a lot to ask, but give it a try.
All right. So you can call me Mackie. It's fine. Whatever. So I went to State, and I went there twice because I liked it so much. The first 4 years, I spent time getting an art applications degree, which prepared me to be a museum curator, which I was not really sure about, but I thought like that would be cool. And then I did that for a little bit after I got out, and I was like, ah, this sucks. So I went back to school, and I got a degree in design from the College of Design. And I think that's like where things started like really kind of going crazy in my life. Is like, so my last year of design school, you have like a big project and everything, so it was like really stressful already. And then I had a roommate who had sublet my apartment, and he was like really mentally unstable, suicidal. And then my sister had like a really terrible relationship too with, and she was in Greensboro, so I was like trying to like cover all that in a year, and like I just was like super stressed out. It was terrible. And had like a lot of anxiety from that as well, as you can imagine. And then right after that, I got a really good corporate design job at a software company, and I worked there for 3 years or so. But I just had like so much going on that I hadn't like addressed, that like sitting in a corporate cubicle office just like pushing pixels around like was not the great environment. So I ended up quitting that job, and I took on another job in a completely unrelated field of cell phone towers. So I spent like 3 years traveling around the U.S. basically like climbing up really high and like working on cell phone stuff so you could like text and Instagram everybody. So that was pretty cool. Met a lot of really interesting people, but again, that was not where God wanted me, so I ended up taking another break from whatever path I thought I was on, and I currently work at a farm in East Raleigh, so if you guys need any hookups with veggies or chicken or pork, I'm your man. It's organic too. You guys are into that, right? Cool.
So you moved back to Raleigh, and shortly after you started working at the farm, you also met a girl.
Yeah.
And unlike most girls that you had on and off dated, this one felt like she was worthy of the expectations that would be put on you for a relationship, and you started thinking she could be the one.
Right, yeah, which is pretty unusual of me, I'd say. I was like really amped about her. She was a strong part of a church, so I was like, that was like number one.
Right.
And we got along really well, and she was keeping me in line.
I asked him, I was like, so why didn't you ever bring him to church? I mean, I don't even know him, and I'm like, I'm kind of offended. Why didn't you bring her to church? And he's like, that's a little
it's
bit.
Like, bringing like someone to your family, you know, it's like you gotta work out a few things before the brother says stuff, and the sister's always gonna be thinging, and the mom, you know, a lot of things.
So there were some things like you were feeling pretty good, but there were some things that you wanted to like clear, the things that you hadn't really talked about that were kind of important to you that you felt like needed to be talked about before you took that next step in your mind in that relationship.
For sure.
So you had the conversation. How did that go?
it didn't really go as like I expected, just because like God is supremely in charge of everything, and He, you know, the Holy Spirit has a really strong hold on me, and He like was like, no. And I was like, come on, God, like I've been waiting so long. This girl seems great. And like I had a breakup with her, which is really hard and difficult. So, yeah.
So that was about a year ago that you broke it off with her.
Right.
And I'm not going to ask a poorly worded and nebulous sort of question, but you have a really good answer to it. Yeah. How do you feel about being single now?
it's pretty sweet, you know. you know, no one's telling me what to eat or when to go to bed. it's great because I am an adult, okay.
No, but you said there are interactions that you have had with
right.
people in the different positions that you've had that could not have happened
right.
if you were having a tie, like having to get home to a wife or to a wife and kids.
Yeah, so like working the cell phone tower, I had like a little crew which became a little family. And one of the guys that was on my crew was a Moroccan immigrant, and he is Muslim, and we spent 3 years, and he was married at the time, or he still is. we spent 3 years together, and we joked about it because he spent more time with me than he did with his wife. So like we had like a lot of really interesting conversations about faith and like what I felt like God was doing. And then Jeff was like really helpful, like kind of leading me into like some good like references and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then now with the farm, it's like the guy I work with, Daniel, like his life is like one of the worst like country songs you can think of. Like, you know, like his house burned down, he lost two dogs, like his dad almost died, his stepbrother killed himself. It's like anything you could think of for, I mean, if, and his truck broke down too, so yeah, it's a good country song. But I mean, if I had been in a relationship, I couldn't have devoted the time and the effort to the relationships that I was engaged in at the time.
We talked after Tuesday, and something that you'd said stuck out to me is that the woman that, like, you are not willing to compromise on letting God be your whole purpose.
Yeah.
It's got to be God giving you a pretty unique woman that's willing to roll with you.
Yeah. I like things and stuff. yeah, and so like he's been a central focus for me, like a compass. Like, you know, it's like wherever you want me, God, I'm there. It's like, you know, it's so weird because I went from like a very intense like design schooling, and then I'm like farming, and I'm like climbing cell phone towers, and it's like hanging around these knuckleheads. But God has always been prevalent. So.
And God's always been the one that's led you to those places.
For sure.
So, thank you guys for sharing your stories. Well done. In keeping it, it just, here's what I hear from all three of you. God has been and continues to be working in each of you, and that He is doing some pretty amazing life-giving things in you and through you. What I am not hearing is that you are more broken or off-kilter or messed up than any of us in here, I mean, at least myself. And yet, we married folk can sometimes look at singleness as something that is broken, that needs to be fixed. And Danielle, I'm going to come to you because there's one other thing that people, very well-meaning and maybe applicable to their own lives, will say and project on you guys that can be hurtful and be misread. It's when you stop looking, that's when God is going to bring you your spouse.
Yeah, which my immediate reaction is like, cool, I did that like 10 years ago. So nailed it. But much more importantly, and for the sake of time, I would say what is demeaning about that is like, oh, so like, you think I don't have like faith, and I'm still like, he's still working on me, but not you, because you're married, and you like solved it. Awesome.
Yeah. Another question, and I'm going to let Danielle, you or Sam, answer this one. Who do you feel, well, and all of you answered unanimously the same to this. Who do you feel values your singleness more? The church, not just Oak City Church, but like the church as a whole, or the world?
I said the world.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And yeah. So, what, in what ways?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with me when I step out into the world because I'm not married. Increasingly, that is something that people even look positively upon. I'm not broken if I step out into the world. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't feel like there's a huge blinking, what are those things called?
Light?
Yep. like there's no huge blinking sign over my head saying something's wrong with me. Right. Like, my priorities are valued as much as anybody else's in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's a cultural mindset in the church that is not biblically based at all. Paul, there was this guy who wrote a lot of the letters in the New Testament. He was also single, and he said he really implored for other people to remain single. He said in 1 Corinthians 7:7, "I wish that all were as I myself am," and this is regarding being single. That's my words, not the Bible. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. And just to be clear, when he's talking about gift, this is in the context of him talking about single people, married people, and how they are supposed to live out their faith. And so when he says each one has his own gift from God, he's saying one of one kind, meaning one of marriage and one of singleness. So from that, we can take singleness does not mean brokenness. It's not meaning that something needs to be fixed. It is a valuable gift that God has given as valuable, as marriage. And so let's just think about that. If when God gives a gift and yet it is stripped of its value by your church family, that creates a problem. And it is hard to see or believe that unintentionally, when someone is undervalued or overlooked or left out because they don't fit in your stage of life, that provides a breeding ground for isolation and division in the church and bitterness. So where do we go from here? And it can't hurt to start with the gospel and the fact that we are all sinners, all equally sinners, and we all needed to be saved from our brokenness. And God loves us so much, I cannot even, this is amazing, that he gave his perfect son for us. Jesus lived on this earth, died the death we were supposed to die, so that we could be forgiven, redeemed, and called his kids. And that's amazing. The kids part, in Galatians 4:4-5, it says, "But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoptions as sons," and I would add in, and daughters. So in Christ, we're adopted into the family of God. Because of what Jesus did, we're brothers and sisters. we're family. And so how do we, Oak City Church, go from just hearing that we're brothers and sisters to actually living like we are brothers and sisters, living like we are family? I'm going to punt this back to y'all. Sam, since you have the microphone already, love to hear about that family in Apex. Yeah. that's brought you into their family.
Yeah. I feel like one of the real things that it's helpful for people to know is that just because I'm single doesn't mean I'm any less called to family. And so I'm going to need family. And so it's helpful when people are open to letting you land in their family and be family. And so, you know, my best friend, she was my college roommate, one of the ones that got married before we graduated. She and her husband live in Apex, and they are family to me. So I eat with them once a week. We do all the things together. I'm not allowed to miss school things for their kids and all those type of things. Christmas, we have family traditions, and whether or not I can be there is important, and they try and work around that. And so they're just family to me, and it doesn't matter if I come over for dinner and their kids are crazy. They are sometimes. Yeah. They just, that's family and that's life, and I'm a part of that. So being open to letting a single person into the messiness of your life. We're not surprised when things are crazy at your house.
Word. Danielle, you want to share?
Yeah. So the thing that came to mind for me was just this really great morning when my mom has come here not at all infrequently, but my dad doesn't get to come very much because a lot of times he works on Sunday. And so one Sunday my dad could actually come, and they walked in the door, and from the front door to the coffee, they couldn't make it like a step without three separate men in the church coming up and introducing themselves. And then they said, "Oh, I'm, you know, Danielle's mom and dad," or whatever, responded with, "Oh, thank you so much for coming, and we just are so grateful for her, and we love her, and she's, you know, cool," or whatever. I don't know. It's weird to talk about yourself. But what was really neat was, like, just them speaking into my dad's heart of, like, your daughter is valued and that she's part of our family. And I just had this, like, really, like, God moment of just, like, these are my brothers. And they didn't have to do that. And they didn't know what it meant to me, but it meant the world. And I know it meant the world to him. So even little things like that, not that you should attack my parents when they come, but, like, your words mean a lot and your encouragement means a lot in a brotherly way and a sisterly way. It makes me feel really included in the community. So,
hi, Maggie. There's a family in here who I remember you saying specifically, like, you don't feel like an inconvenience. You feel like you're a brother when you walk in their door.
Right. I mean, so, like, I come from a family of, like, five. So it's, like, always used to, like, you know, just tons of stuff going on. And the Custers have been a really great surrogate family for me. Like, doing all my, like, farming stuff and all the other things. I was doing a delivery one time this week, I think, and a watermelon I had split in half when I was delivering. And so, unfortunately, it didn't make it to its expected spot, and I just stopped by the Custer house. I was like, "Hey, this watermelon is open. You guys want to eat some watermelon?" But, yeah, I mean, Anna and Kyle have been a great, like, brother, sister to me, so.
That there's a comfortableness there.
Yeah,
like,
for
you
sure.
You don't feel like you're intruding.
Not at all. Like, I think Kyle and I recently had a conversation, like, you know, it's like family because, you know, you could go in and, like, open the fridge and, like, help yourself to whatever and it wouldn't be offensive, which
awesome.
I do a lot of, so.
So does this mean that we all let Dave Mackey come over and invade our refrigerator? I don't know.
Yes, that's great. You heard it first.
Does this mean that we? I mean, maybe it does. It certainly means paying attention when you're in a conversation with a group of people, being aware of the people that are outside of your stage of life, like, can they connect with the conversation that's happening? Do they feel like they're a part of what's going on? It can mean asking them about their day and not being so concerned about your own. It can be respecting their priorities, even if they look different than yours. It looks like being a family. This goes both ways. It's a relationship, you know, and so it goes both ways. But I think that for me and for anyone who's with me in the married with kids realm, it's easy to feel we're in the majority. And I think that the burden falls on us more to be cognizant of being an intentional part of the family and inviting people that are outside of our stage of life into that family. Outside in the world, the majority rules. In the church, that should not be the case. I'm going to read some scripture here, and I think that it really reflects and encapsulates how our Father would love to see us operate as brothers and sisters in the family that he has designed. It's Colossians 3, and it reads, "Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free," I would interject, "married or single. But Christ is all and in all. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Y'all, thank you for sharing your stories. I'm going to close this up with prayer. God, thank you so much for your family, for having us, for loving us enough to do what you needed to do to bring us into your family, Father. It is a beautiful, beautiful picture. Father, help us as a church to love well, to be kind and loving to each other, and get out of our own little kingdoms and realize that there's a much bigger, more important kingdom to live in, and it includes a lot of different people. God, that we would honor you in our relationships in this church and in our community, and that we would be a light, that we would be different, that we would stand out as being being your church and being your family. It's in your name I pray. Amen.